Welcome to the Make Me a Pro podcast with your host, Charity Menday.
Hi guys, and welcome to Make Me a Pro podcast. This is season 2, episode 8. Today I wanted to bring you guys up to speed with a few things here at Make Me a Pro. We're almost done with the second season and I've been cooking up a storm that I'll be releasing later on in October. If you guys have me on LinkedIn, you would have noticed I've moved across the Atlantic to start a new job. I've been documenting my transition and I'll be sharing that in an interactive way with you over the coming weeks and months. I'll be looking more specifically at travel and how to make the most of global opportunities in your first few years of your career. To that tune, next week I'll be interviewing the founder of Jet Setter Jobs, a terrific digital platform which helps gap year students, travellers and backpackers find jobs while they're abroad. Keep an eye out for that. On today's episode, I'll be sharing the audio from my launch event with you. Now, several weeks ago, I hosted a launch event to introduce the new site and the new look and feel to the Make Me a Pro podcast. On the panel that evening was Andrew Fastenage, the founder of Apps Africa, a pan-African mobile and technology news site, and the co-founder of Forward Africa, UK's first African technology accelerator. Claude Williams was also on the panel, the founder of Dream Nation, who's featured in the season a couple of episodes ago, and Tony Highland, who's a senior civil servant for the Department for Work and Pensions. We discuss sharing success, role modelling for the future generations, as well as what it means for young professionals to break into the world of work from an entrepreneurial perspective. Check it out.
Thanks for having me. Andrew Fastenage. I'm very impressed you got my name, pronounced my name right. Not many people do. I run appsafrica.com, which is a mobile tech and innovation site covering all of Africa. Why an Irishman in Africa? Long story, but I started off in Africa probably about 8 years ago through a startup in London, which was in the mobile space selling into Africa. And there the kind of passion for Africa started. I won't labour too much on that. But more recently, I've co-founded Fast Forward Africa, which is the first African-focused tech accelerator in London. And we are starting in September with our first idea accelerator and then with a startup accelerator in 2016. So anybody here with some great ideas for Africa and the technology around them, we'd love to speak with you later on.
Hi, I'm Claude Williams. I'm the founder of Dream Nation, which is a social enterprise. Our overall mission is to empower people to be practical about the way they pursue their dreams. One of the main objectives that I want to do, probably not within my lifetime, but as what I would like the company to go on to accomplish, is, as Charity mentioned, eradicating unemployment as a whole. The way we plan on doing that is by helping entrepreneurs develop the skill sets they need to be successful in that area, but then also helping young people develop the skills they need to be great employees, whether it's for the companies being set up or whether it's for existing companies today.
Fantastic. My name's Tony Highland. I work for the Department for Work and Pensions. I'm a senior civil servant. Don't let that put you off. I am a career civil servant. I've been here for 23, 24 years. I've done every conceivable job for the Department for Work and Pensions. I've managed job centres. I've worked in some difficult areas in London. I have a passion about employability. I have a passion about youth unemployment. I really have a commitment to sort of supporting young people either into business or into employment. My work essentially is with large national companies. I work with large national companies and I really put them on the spot and I say, put your money where your mouth is, make sure that you are providing graduate work experience opportunities, you're providing great opportunities for young people full stop, and jobs directly. I work privately on a consultancy basis really with a lot of universities and colleges, and I do a lot of sessions with people like young black graduates. And I go around the universities and I'm dismayed at the level of understanding that careers advisors have about the world of employment and about where the opportunities are. So one of my missions in life is to go out and sort of really support graduates, young people that really want to get on in the world of employment, because I think there's a big gap there. There's a huge space there where we need to be doing a lot more around that. So that's really my mission and why I'm really here to sort of maybe share some experience. I write as well, so I'm not sure it's completely separate. Totally irrelevant to what I'm talking about. I thought I'd throw it in because I do, you know, if I didn't. So that's me.
Okay, great.
Great, thank you guys so much. And what anyone who knows me, I like to just be very interactive. So I'm sure a lot of you have burning questions. So I'm gonna do a hybrid. So I'm gonna ask questions as well as kind of throw it out to you guys. So does anyone have anything immediate that comes out to any of the panelists?
I just wanted to ask Tony about your opinion on internships, because there's a lot of pressure now for companies to offer paid internships.
Yeah.
But then the downside of that is it can mean that fewer companies are willing to offer the kind of experience that young people can get. We have a lot of personal experience with this in our company, so what is the government policy moving towards on that?
Well, I think the ideal is that internships are leading into direct jobs and direct employment. So obviously where the employers actually have the capacity to employ people, and obviously they lead directly into jobs, we would support that. So we think it's a good thing, apprenticeships, internships, work. I'm really more around sort of direct job opportunities for graduates and actually trying to actually engage graduates and get some meaningful work experience opportunities that lead directly into
jobs.
But
I think that's what's difficult, because companies are forced to move towards paid internships, probably they would be able to offer fewer, and then that shuts down an avenue of having this work, unpaid work experience turn into a real job.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it may well be a combination of the two, and I think some employers, as I say, may not go down the internship routes and actually may still work with us and do different things with us. So each employer will do different things. And some will have their own particular graduate programs anyway and different routes into. So I take the point, and obviously that the internships are there, and that's the way the push is, because obviously that's government policy. But I think there are a whole range of other avenues for people to explore. And I think the biggest challenge, I think, is getting those big employers to show interest in those programs anyway. And we are having some success in that in certain sectors that are growing, such as construction, facilities management. There are different types of roles, different types of opportunities available. It's trying to actually open up employers to recruiting more graduates, young people, and then getting students to think about those growth sectors in a positive way as well. Because I think that's the battle, that if you're studying law or you want to be a doctor, you know the route that you're going down. If you're doing any other discipline as a student, unless you've got someone who's really guiding you, telling you where the growth sectors are this and this and this, there are opportunities there, then it doesn't really happen. So part of the battle is trying to actually open up mindsets from employers and students as well. But I'm not an apologist for government policy. It's not my policy,
that's
but
true,
I know exactly what you're saying, and I can only agree. But I think from what we are, we're aware of that, but we're trying to make sure that each employer does what it can in that space.
And I think next to that as well, Claude, like you said, started Dream Nation, and you started hiring people and getting people into your team. What have you found, both as a startup founder and kind of business owner, but also in terms of using your network and creating opportunities for young professionals on the first rung of the ladder?
So firstly, I definitely agree that unpaid internships are really important for starting a business. Everyone needs employment in my business now started as an intern originally, so I personally don't want to see something like that get eradicated as well. But what I have found as well, because of the nature of the way my business has grown, I normally have people that are asking to come and work for us for free. Ultimately, they'll say, "Do you have a job?" And I say, "Not currently," and say, "Oh, let's just come and work at your company voluntarily to begin with." So I found that for organisations that do have a vision or mission which is inspiring enough to people, then people want to be a part of it in one way or another. So potentially that's one way that a lot of companies, especially at the startup stage, if they want to capture the imagination of millennials, because we're finding that this generation money is a motivator, but it's not as much of a motivation as having meaningful work. So if you can provide meaningful work, I've found that a lot of people want to be a part of that anyway.
Yeah, and I think just to add on that, from kind of my little bit of experience, the whole unpaid internship thing is a difficult one, because you want to get the experience, but at the same time, you've got bills to pay. And so it's a hard kind of balance, and I think companies really struggle with, you know, providing the opportunity and getting the people, but also being able to support us, because not everyone has kind of a trust fund to live off of. So it's definitely hard. But does anyone else have any questions to throw up to the panel?
Yeah, I just had, I was interested in sort of your goals as far as what you consider, 0% unemployment, or, eradicating unemployment. I mean, for you, is that, like a kind of the 3% natural rate where there's obviously turnover, people are, leaving jobs and trying to find them? Is that getting rid of kind of the non-participating part of the labor force and like bringing those people back in? I was just interested in a little more on your vision there.
So as I just said before, it is probably a vision that's not happened in my lifetime of then. So in terms of what it looks like at the final side of the picture, I can't talk for that because that's probably another mention that I've had to see hand in that side of it. For me, I wanted to set a goal which was audacious enough that it does capture people's imaginations, that we can think about the problem differently. I'm aware there's some people that are simply not going to participate in the work field because they're sometimes physically not able to, and so on and so forth. And there will be people that are in between jobs and so on and so forth. But I guess the vision that I have is that people view the work they do differently. The reason we call it Dream Nation is because I would love people to see the work they do as being their dream job. And in that case, so whether that is working at a corporation, whether that's being an entrepreneur or being an artist or whatever it is for you, it's having a form of employment which is practical but something that you love. So what you'll find is that some people who don't participate in the workforce as of today is simply because it's a system not designed for them. We're not all meant to work in places like PwC and so on and so forth. Some of us are meant to be doing more creative pursuits, but I've found that the education system, for example, doesn't encourage you to do so. What almost trains to think you have to go on to be a doctor or go on to be a lawyer and so on and so forth. And those career paths are amazing and important, but I do want people to think bigger, that those aren't the only options available to you. So I think that if you can create a change in mindset, that you'll find there'll be more people that are actually willing to work if they're able to find the work which is right for them.
Can I just add on that? I think it's a change in mindset, but a change in process in schools. One thing we are doing is that, I will talk on behalf of the government now, there is government policy about, we will be looking at putting advisors in schools. I know it may sound bizarre, not a frightening thing, but the whole issue for me is 14, 15, 16-year-olds that are sort of exempt from the education system in a way that aren't going to be lawyers and doctors. And as you say, it's tapping into that potential that we don't currently do, because I think a lot of kids then get forced into the education system, but it seems automatically that's where they need to be. Culturally, there's a lot of pressure on families to say, right, you need to be going to college, you need to be going, and you may not necessarily need to be doing that. You've got the right guidance to say that there's an apprenticeship here that you can do at 16 or 17 that will get you a job within a year. I talk from personal experience, my son, I took him out to sixth form because it was a waste of his time and everyone's time having him in there. Not hugely academic, was never, not going to go that way, but he loves sports. So I just knew there were apprenticeships in sports and leadership. I rang the sixth form and I said, well, I'm taking him out. I said, you can't do that. I can. So I arranged an apprenticeship for him, and see, he did it 16 and a half. He did a year, got his BTEC in sports leadership, got a job. So he's working now in schools. So that's sort of indicative of the way the system works. I think we need to be doing a lot more around how we engage younger people that aren't necessarily going down that normal prescribed route. So we are looking at putting advisors into schools, sixth forms, to actually try to tap into those other opportunities so we don't lose them in the system for 3 or 4 years. And they come out, as we do now, with graduates not knowing anything about social networking, not knowing about what opportunities they want to go for, what they need to do. So,
what steps can we take, and I think this is for everyone on the panel, what steps can we take to kind of make the most of the food chain? Because I think one of the key buzzwords around millennials is that they are very enterprising and they are looking at different ways of doing things. How can we make that kind of message trickle down from both your experiences but also the people that, the millennials that you work with?
How does the message trickle down from?
Yeah, how can we make it so that the message trickles down from, let's say, this generation downwards? Because my brother's, 13 years old? So he's just about in that catchment area where he's figuring out what he wants, he likes to do, not what his sister tells him he should be doing.
I think there's, from my experience, and I'm not a millennial, I'm a little bit older. I think even from when I left school and went to uni, the startup wave that's hit in the last, probably since the last recession really, has been phenomenal. The recession has made young people who can't get a job go out and think about what could I do. Especially in London, you look around and there's people who don't have a job are thinking, right, I'll set up a food business, I'll do this, I'll do that. So I think sometimes you just need to look within yourself and think, look around you and see what's happening and say, right, well, am I going to rely on getting this, or am I going to rely on getting into this university, or am I going to rely on these other things, or actually, am I going to get off my backside and do it? And the only way people really will do that is if they see older people, such as your younger brother, looking up to you and what you're doing. But for me, at a young age, kids need to be exposed to work, or the ethic of work, whether that is a paper round or whatever. I mean, I think that's critical for kids to realise that you've got to cut the lawn to get, you know, a quid, or you've got to do whatever. I was recently involved with a charity who were doing this amazing thing here and in Africa called Citrus Saturdays, where kids made their own lemonade, had their own little branding, and then got this seed capital to start this, and then had to walk on the Saturday and sell it and made the profit. Very fun for these kids, very exciting, but that's already, you know, planted the seed of actually I could go out and do something and make a return on that. And I think it just, in some ways, I think we just have to foster the idea that actually you can't always rely on the system. Sometimes you need to, you know, obviously you need education and you need support, but sometimes, as was said, you don't fit within that system, and there is other options as well. I think that's, for me, is the other point, is not everybody will be a doctor, lawyer, or whatever. But that doesn't mean that you don't have an amazing career path ahead. I think it's that, and also encouraging kids that actually, you know what, you might be in a crap job now, you might do 10 crap jobs, but after that, you gain experience in all these different areas, and in 10 years you suddenly go, well, I can see how this all joins together now. Which I think at a young age is very difficult. So I don't have to answer this question.
I would say it's probably down to exposure, to just knowing that there are options available. I know for me, I got set on the entrepreneurship path by reading Richard Branson's book when I was about 17 years old. That was the first time that I'd even heard of an entrepreneur. Before that time, I just kind of, you didn't think about how did these businesses around you even get there. Yeah, like that's part of what my company does, is that we do work on actually getting the message out there about the things that people are doing. So for our conferences, we have people from a variety of career paths, whether they're entrepreneurs, or whether they work in corporations like this, or whether they are Olympic athletes or YouTube superstars and so on and so forth, just so that they can essentially plant the idea that there are different options out there, and if you do follow what you're passionate about, then apply a little bit of enterprise to that as well, then you can find yourself in a career or a job that you create for yourself that you love. So I'd say it's more down to, yeah, not just focusing on kind of what we do in school lessons today, like the core subjects, but also making sure that we are allowing young people to be exposed to new ideas, different career paths, and people that the everyday heroes around them, like whether it's the shopkeeper or the up-and-coming sports star, whatever it is, like just to expose them to new ideas of what they can do with their lives.
I think there's three or four things. Modelling is really important about, obviously, young people seeing models, good practice models, and whatever. The economy as a government, we need to be doing more, which we accept. I think we all have a responsibility with the education system, because we all benefit in one way with it. We need to do a lot more. Germany does a hell of a lot around it, almost builds its education system, university system around its economy, because it tends to look at where the growth sectors are, what's good for the economy, where it needs to go, and then it sort of gears its whole education system around that, and then it pushes out apprenticeships and opportunities for young people. But, you know, fascinated by, you know, we'll be talking, we'll be doing lots of work, because I think we do need to all go in and do a lot more around talking to young people, showing that there are other routes that they can take, other opportunities, because that just doesn't happen in that environment. I do worry about 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds about the advice they're given. Career advice schools, to be fair to them, know about the world of academia, they know how to tell them about further education, where they don't know about the world of employment. And they're at a loss often when they do have a youngster and they appear to be going slightly off the edge and going this direction. They won't have the skills that you would have to say, well, actually, there are opportunities to think about this, or even the credibility that you would have to do that. So I think we do all have a responsibility there to get that lesson down.
And I think but one of the key problems I find with the education system in this country is that we learn how to read and we learn how to memorize, but when it's actually going out to the world of work, we're kind of having to learn things for the first time. Like my friend was saying that, you know, doing a degree like statistics, you learn how to use Excel, but the Excel that you need in the world of work is completely different. Mm-hmm. So it's about giving people the right skills, the on-job skills from day one. But your question?
I'm not sure if the question is just a comment. I think sort of like, and talking about modeling as well, so I think that's really important. Like growing up, my dad was a doctor, and for me, that was sort of like the thing that I was sort of aspiring to. Oh, my dad is a doctor, I want to go into medicine. And I didn't really sort of explore, I wasn't really exposed to sort of a lot of other career options. So, I lived in Nigeria, and there were like leaders, you know, sort of like computer science or anything related to startups. And it wasn't until, even when I came to England, I was still sort of like focusing on medicine. Actually going to medical school, whilst medical school, I realized that, you know what, this is not what I want to do. I'm interested in computer science and sort of like startups. And, you know, one of the things I did when I went back to Nigeria was I started a computer club. And it wasn't like, sort of like how to fix computers, or sort of like teaching people, exposing them about how to program. And I think like for me, that was really important, because I felt like if that existed when I was in secondary school, if I knew when I was 13 and 14 that outside of medicine, accountancy, law, like corporate world, there was this whole new world of sort of like startups and computers, maybe I wouldn't have spent sort of like, you know, 7-8 years going down the wrong path. I mean, I don't know if I would change anything, because the big part of where I am now today, but like I think modeling is important, and exposure as well is also plays a big role in who or what people aspire to.
There is a lot about a cultural influence in terms of the way people go direction about education. Education is held in very high esteem, quite rightly, but I think, as I say, the pressures are often that you're not forced to go down a particular route, because actually you think, well, that's really where my family want me to be. I think there may be a bit an education piece about the older generation, as well, about parents and about, you know, this sort of reality of the world of work as well. That's a really...
I think, Tony, I think you sort of hit the nail on the head. I think for a lot of us, that the older generation, we grew up with a mindset and a mentality of we needed to have some basic foundation, which was we needed to go to college, we needed to go to university, get a graduate degree, do a master's, do an MBA. Now, all of those things do play a very, very fundamental role in the development of every one of us. And yes, maybe I would have preferred to have been opportune to other opportunities when I was growing older as well, when I was much younger. But I think there's more work that needs to be done with the parents, the older generation, because based on my understanding and the way I was exposed to and the way I grew up and where I see myself today, that okay, I'm not in a bad place, I might not be a millionaire. But then I try to shape my kids that same way. I try to talk to them that same way. I try to expose them to the sort of things that I knew and I'm confident that works for them, that I believe would work for them. Now, I know times are changing quite sporadically, but I think a lot needs to be done as well, to speaking to the older generation and getting that mindset, maybe finding a balance between it, because it's not all wrong. It's also for kids that go to university or have college degrees. They have a basic foundation. It helps the way they reason, the way they think, the way they challenge ideas. And you need that. You need that to create a balance between making a decision if you want to go the entrepreneurial route, or you want to pursue academia, or you want to go into the banking sector, whatever sector you need. So I think more needs to be done for a lot of parents as well.
That dialogue doesn't happen at parents' evenings, does it? When your parents go and hear about your kids' report and heard it, they don't get a dialogue about, you know, what's best and, you know, how, what's best for your child. Absolutely right. And, you know, we do need to do a lot more in that space, not only with the children but with the parents, and try to get them to understand that there's no stigma attached to actually having your 16-year-old do an apprenticeship that's going to get them into a job that they want to do, and they're bypassing college and they may not have a university degree, but hey, if they're working and doing a job that they want to do and satisfying themselves in terms of career, what is the issue with that? So, absolutely agree.
There was something clear that I'm not against education anyway. I got a degree myself, and the process of getting my degree was very important to me being able to run my company the way I do today as well. So I'm not one of those people that says everyone, like, school's a waste of time, but it's extremely important, and as you're right, it does set the foundation for you. But I think what is important for us to understand is that the height of academic success is really to become a professor or a researcher, and that's really it. So sometimes we do need to allow people to understand that school is important, but in its right context. Not to put too much importance on the grades that you're getting in the classroom, but also focus on the skills that you're developing outside the classroom as well, and finding that balance. Because, as well, one of the lesser things that I'm beginning to understand, like, quite deeply, is we're preparing young people for jobs that don't even exist today. So then, as a result, the education system can only be so useful. And as a result of that as well, the advice that parents are having in terms of you need to go to this career path and that career path is only so useful, because the truth is a lot of those jobs probably won't exist by the time their children gets to work in the world. So that's why I really do focus on people telling them practical skill sets and practical mindsets that allow them to be flexible in that mindset. Otherwise they're just going to be unequipped when your life starts for them.
I absolutely agree with what you said. Do you think that the geographical location where you are plays a key role as well? Because one of the key challenges I'm finding these days are in Africa, the picture around what line of education, or if you go the educational route or not, it's very different when you're in a country like this and when you're in Africa. There's a clear demarcation between both of them. And there's a cultural element to it in Africa. That if you don't get, irrespective of, I struggle to see how you can convince your typical African dad or mom that you want your child, you want his or her child to go become maybe an apprentice somewhere. They find it a bit of an insult. And I think, I just wonder what can be done in that space. When I was growing up, I had uncles. I grew up in Nigeria as well before coming here to do my undergrad. And I could remember a number of my cousins as well that never wanted to go into university. They just wanted to do something totally different. But it was always considered as it was substandard. It wasn't the right standard. It was seen lower in the society. And it's what can we do to actually challenge that mindset, challenge that mentality as well, that the country sort of embeds upon a lot of us?
From my perspective, I think what it all comes down to is that parents really do love their children and they just want what's best for them. When I do see parents that kind of react to that sort of mindset, it's not because they don't want the best for their child, they just want them to be safe. So I would say in that case the best opportunity to help a parent see the situation differently would be to, like, give them hardcore evidence of these are the people that have been successful by taking this pathway. Because I think that's what it comes down to, is that they want their child to take the safest option to allow them to be successful one day. So if you can show them, this is what someone else has done, this is what this person's done, these are the statistics, these are the percentages of people that have gone on to do this, then I think the conversation becomes less about emotions and more about facts. And I think that would probably be the most effective way of doing that.
I think it's also looking at education about growth sectors. Take the point very much that there's a lot of people being trained for jobs that won't exist in the future in a way, and the education system's geared up. I'm not quite sure that certain countries have got that right. I think Germany does that right. Yeah. In this country, we've got huge construction growth, for instance, facilities management growth, retail slightly on decline, where in the actual world, a lot of people do their shopping online. Yeah. Retail is a sector that's changing quite rapidly. There's a huge demand in the construction sector for people of any discipline. One of the issues I have is talking to employers that they cannot attract graduates into construction because historically, graduates wouldn't necessarily think of there being opportunities in the construction sector. But they're huge opportunities and they're great pay and they're good jobs. But I've been real bad at trying to get students interested in them. So it is about also recognising what opportunities are there, you know. What does the country look like? And London, once again, is a building site, you know, and there's certain parts of it, Birmingham's the same, it's all over. There's tons of it. So if the penny doesn't drop for people thinking, well, maybe construction's a good sector to be in, then it's about time people thought of that. Because I get lots of employers saying, we want graduates, we just don't attract them, because historically we're not renowned as a blue chip company, or we're not perceived that way, but we should. So there is an education piece about that as well.
And on the topic of education as well, we've been talking about high school and university, but on an even earlier level, you know, you look at some countries that are very much investing in the jobs of the future, the jobs that will exist. For instance, in Finland, they're teaching very, very basic coding, very, very basic programming in primary schools. And you've got, you know, a lot of people advocating on the other side, teaching fiscal responsibility in math classes, you know, not just, you know, I don't know, pre-calculus and, you know, all your useful things, but as well just how to pay your taxes and how the market works and, you know, things like this interest and mortgages. And it just seems like such common knowledge. Like, why wouldn't we instill this in our children at a young age? It seems to make so much sense. Yet the school systems, and I mean especially far more from in the States, like, they seem so slow to catch on to that. And why do you think that is, and you know, how do you see countries catching up to that? We have models of it, we see it work.
It's slow in this country because we have the education systems in silo over here, the economy is over here, and there's no joining of them. So that's why it's very, very slow, because the politically we know what schools should be doing, but we don't actually have the clout to do it or influence. So there is that sort of, there's a recognition of the educational excellence in this country, which is quite right, but we don't ally to what we actually need. So that's why it happens, because there aren't real clear links between the two. So we are trying to embrace that now by having advisors in schools, talking to young people at an earlier stage, and trying to actually get them to think differently. So all of this about education of parents as well, we need to be doing a lot more of that. But it is frustrating, because once you explain the argument, you can see it very clearly what the issues are. It's a very, very difficult thing trying to solve that problem. That's why I say we all have a responsibility on that. But it is bizarre how Germany, Finland, even Australia, that there are different parts of the world that seem to have cracked this, that your education system really is geared up to training people for the world of work, the world of opportunities that are there, not that you think will be there, or the prehistoric roles that won't be there, that you know won't be there, and it's not just good for its own sake, unless you know you're going to be a teacher or a professor of philosophy or something. You know, which I'm not knocking that, I'm not knocking the education system, I'm going to be a byproduct of it myself.
And I think, just because I'm mindful of time and I know everyone has got, we have some lovely cakes in the back as well, so I know you would want to get to them, but just on the theme of sharing kind of success and educating people, particularly the two entrepreneurs we have in the room, I know a lot of people in this room have entrepreneurial ambition. So what would kind of be your tips or some of the things you would have wanted to know when you set out that you can share with the audience?
I'm not going to claim I'm successful anyway. I'm still a toiling entrepreneur. I'm far from successful. Things I'd like to know, I don't know. I suppose I went through education. I did a degree. Coming back to your point, you know, the education system I went through, you went to primary school, you went to secondary school. you went to university and, you know, you tried to get a degree, and there was never any lateral thinking about where do I actually want to go in life. And at 17 or 16, you're choosing a degree course, which you know very little about. I suppose the point I alluded to earlier is that I've done a lot of jobs, different jobs. I've done a lot of different things, which at the time I was like, I don't like that. But it's all experience. And I think looking back now, if somebody said to me, just get all this experience and it will pay off. And I think that's the most important thing I would say to somebody, is just take every situation that you're in, every job that you're in, and just look at it and say, what are the positives I'm going to get out of this? What's the experience I'm getting out of this? And I think that, you know, even the worst job you have, you'll look back in 10 years and say, you know what, it was terrible, but at least it gave me a little bit more strength to do what I'm doing now. And your life is never that bad, you know. I don't think it's ever that bad that, you know, we talked about the African context and, and the thinking of parents, because I identify with that. It's a sense of the older generation who've worked very hard to maintain land or a farm and have toiled. We have a very easy, I'd have to say. And my other big thing for me, which I kind of always had a passion for and has almost led me into these other jobs, is travel. If I would say to any young person to travel and immerse yourself in other cultures, and I'm not saying you pack your bag and go on a three-month holiday, you pack your bag and go on a working holiday, and you will learn so much about yourself and what you want to do and what drives you and what motivates you. And someone has told me that, I kind of found it out in a roundabout way, but I think travel and immersing yourself in lots of different things will just blow your mind. Because if you're in London, you're looking at Starbucks every day, and you're on the tube, and you're reading the Evening Standard, it all becomes the same, and everyone's got Apple, and we're all tapping out, and it's a, you know, it's a, you're on a conveyor belt. Drop yourself into Lagos or Accra, or boom, and you're alive. You're absolutely alive. I'm not just saying Africa, you know, Asia, wherever. But it's a leveler. Drop yourself and drop your smartphone and leave it somewhere, and you know, you suddenly open your eyes and go, wow, this is an amazing world of opportunity, whatever you're working in, whatever industry you're in. And I just don't think you have to stick to the, yes, you've got a degree, or yes, you've got an MBA, but I don't think you have to railroad yourself into that career for the rest of your life if it's something you're not passionate about. My degree, I got, it's kind of helped me in various bits, but I've never really thought that's what I want to do. I think it's a basis to start your career on, but I think you just got to go what you're passionate about and what you really feel like you want to do, because if you're not doing what you don't like, you're not going to last very long.
Yeah, and just before you go, George, I did history and politics, and I got the whole, so you do history, I'll be a history teacher. No, and when I tell people that I work in finance, whatever, it's always like, what? Like, how? So it definitely is a thing about experiencing lots of different things and kind of stretching yourself, as Sheryl Sandberg says, you know, looking for that growth opportunity. But
I guess the big piece of advice I would wish somebody told me early on in my entrepreneurship career would be the importance of reading. And also give me a good reading list to go through. I didn't start reading until about 2012 when I graduated from university, and I can say that I've grown so much more as a consequence of it. The books I've read, I'm approaching my 100th book now. I've learned so much more from that than what I did through all of my years of education. And I could have said that 3 months after starting to read, in all honesty, because really what it's doing or what it's done for me is giving me the insight of people which are much older, much more experienced than I am. The truth is that no matter what it is that you're going through, there's probably someone that's already been through it. They've already learned the lessons, they've already done the hard part, so you can kind of fast forward your development through that stage, but let's get jump into the end of their chapter ultimately, so that when you face those problems, you already know what to do. And I think also one of the benefits of reading for me personally was understanding the side of entrepreneurship that you don't even know about, because when you get to see like our version when it's massive, or Apple when everyone's got their smartphones, all of that, but what you don't see is the emotional context of it. Because what I've now learned is that the reason most startups fail isn't because of lack of money or resources or networks and so on and so forth, it's because the people behind them, they just simply weren't prepared for what it actually takes from the emotional standpoint. So yeah, if I wish somebody told me, or we as entrepreneurs spoke about more openly kind of the vulnerable side of it, as well as we're more open to support each other, rather than just always putting forward our best effort and saying, oh, I'm great, I'm successful, every day's amazing, like I've got this money in the bank account and so on and so forth, because that is really true. I think it will be really beneficial for us to learn from entrepreneurs that have already kind of gone through that process and are where we are today. And I think as a consequence of that, then it will multiply your chance of being successful. So yeah, for me, it'll be meeting and kind of understanding the emotional side of entrepreneurship.
I'd like to say thank you to the amazing panelists, and as always, thank you so much, guys, for listening in. I'm super keen to hear your comments and your feedback. You can find out more information about this episode and other resources on makemeapro.org. You can hear more of the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or connecting via Facebook. And if you want to reach out to me directly, you can give me a shout on Twitter @MissMende or give me a Google on LinkedIn. Until next time, guys.